Good morning.
Good morning.
You could ask the question, what are the holidays about? What's going on here? Not just here, but in this season. Like, what's up? We can't appreciate something that we don't understand. An example, this is, last week I thanked the 49ers, almost called them 79ers. The 49ers for a lovely fruit basket given to Pam and me. And if you weren't here last week and you're a 49er, now, everybody's heard. If you've heard it twice or once, we appreciate. Very nice fruit basket, very kind of you. If I showed you a Scrapple game, Scrabble, not Scrapple. I'm from southeastern PA and we have Scrapple down there. If I showed you a Scrabble game and you said, boy, it looks kind of rough, and I told you that this game board was made by a man named Richard Phillips and his wife Lillian, who were prisoners in Vietnam. They're Alliance missionaries. Richard grew up in the Albany Alliance Church in Albany, Oregon, and he made this Scrabble board while they were prisoners in Vietnam. They were freed later, but he made this thing up from memory. And there are only a couple things that are different than the one that's manufactured. How's that for a memory? If you knew the story behind it, you'd say, boy, I can appreciate that. That's really something. I have a friend who years ago showed me a picture. It was shaped like this. Originally, this was a 4x6 photograph of a family. And he told me that his father had recently died, and for the last year or two, his mother told him that Dad held this photograph in his hands all the time. He literally wore a 4x6 photograph down to something this size. He was remembering his children, his family, his growing up. He had lost many of his mental faculties. But if I told you the story behind this oddly shaped photograph, you'd have some appreciation for it. We can't appreciate something we don't understand. Understanding is so critical to appreciating anything. From 2003 to 2020, among other things, I hauled home heating oil. And one of my customers was in Harrisburg. And usually I would hang the invoice. You've probably seen these if you get fuel oil or propane. I'd hang this on the door. And this particular day, he was home and opened the door. And I handed it to him, but his hand was like here. And then I put it here, and his hand was like here. And we went through this a couple times, and you'd have thought it was some skit on TV of something going wrong. And after a couple of these, he said to me, I'm blind. I never knew that. So anyway, I said, well, I didn't know that. And then I matched up the invoice with his hand, and he took it and he said, wait a minute, I have something for you. So he came back to the door and he said, I made this. I would I'd like to give you this Christmas decoration for your Christmas tree. Now, this has a couple glass pieces in it, some small pieces here. It hangs in my office at home, in my study, up by the window. A blind man gave me this. Now, he can see some things, but he's legally blind. He could see enough to get to the door and all that, but you see, if you understand the story behind it, why it hangs in my office all the time, you have some appreciation for it and for the man who gave it to me. And after he gave it to me, he said, "God bless you." And I said, "God bless you." We can't appreciate something we don't understand. And it's very, very important that we understand a lot of things in life, not just go by them or go through them, but understand what's going on. We can't appreciate something we don't understand. But the question is, what's the purpose of holiday? Why do we have holidays? What is their purpose and what is their function? Holidays could be called special days, or they could be called different days. It's notable, it's identifiable. Holidays have a name. What are the source of holidays? Well, the Bible has different days in it that are mentioned, and the nation has days that are identified as different days, holidays. States do, towns do. Spartansburg has Christmas in Spartansburg. These are different days where we do things that are different than we do any other day. Organizations have holidays. There's a business in Corey that celebrated 40 years in business recently. And they made a big to-do about it. They were celebrating 40 years of a productive business with their employees. It was very, very much a celebration. Churches have holidays. The Harrisburg Chinese Alliance Church, which is part of our international family of believing people, they celebrate the anniversary of the founding of their church. And this past August was the 40th anniversary of the founding of the Harrisburg Chinese Alliance Church. My wife and I were invited to participate in that weekend. It is a great celebration of the faithfulness of God to these people who came here fleeing communism. There are personal holidays. I'm going to conclude this morning with a number of days that are personally significant to me, and I would encourage you to think about days that are special to you and celebrate them, personal days. Businesses set these things up. I mentioned about the 40th anniversary of a business in Corey. Schools have special days, and colleges do, and you could add to the list. So there are all kind of sources for holidays. A concordance is a book that lists words from the Bible and then prints the reference where those words are found. And the Young's Analytical Concordance is about that thick, and it's like this and like this. I could have brought one along, I just didn't want to carry it. If you look up the word remember, remembrance, or remembrance, which is used three different ways and forms. If you look those words up and measured how many column inches there would be 24 1/8 inches of verses I'm going to round that off to 2 feet. Could be this many verses. And the print is so small that I have to use a magnifying glass to see it. 2 feet of the Bible talking about remembering. Holidays, special days, are sources of us remembering things that are worth remembering. I have to admit, there are a lot of things I remember are of little value. Some of them are funny. That could be the only value of it. But there are other things that are really, really, really important and are worth remembering. 2 feet of verses on remembrance. We can't appreciate things we don't understand, and there are some things we ought to remember. To help us remember, we have holidays. There are 3 purposes for a holiday. There are Old Testament feasts that are special days, that are holidays, and they could be grouped in different ways. Some of them are considered fall holidays, and other ones spring holidays, but there are 7 of them, and they're outlined in the Bible. There's Passover, which is the story of God delivering his people from Egypt into the land of promise. There's a feast of unleavened bread, where unleavened bread is eaten for a succession of days. There's the feast of first fruits, which is referred to as the feast of weeks, which is an agricultural celebration of harvest. There is the feast of trumpets, which is Rosh Hashanah. There's the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. It's a feast of remembering the atonement for sin. There is the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot. And this is all explained in Leviticus 23. I'm not going to talk about all the feasts, but there are things that God built into the calendar of his people to help them remember certain things. There are certain things that are important for our memories. There are other sacred feasts or sacred events, like the Sabbath day. There is a celebration of new moons. The Jewish people are on a lunar calendar. Now, my Chinese friends are operate by a lunar calendar. Like when they celebrate Chinese New Year's, which the date varies on according to the lunar calendar. A lot of times it's in February. I don't know what it is this coming year, but they have a big celebration. And as a gesture of friendship, they have mooncakes. It's a kind of a dessert kind of thing. It's about that round and this tall. I believe, I have no proof, but I believe I have the largest collection of mooncakes in Crawford County in my freezer, because my friends in Harrisburg, if they know someone is coming up to see us, will send a collection of mooncakes along for me. And I put them in the freezer, and every now and then I'll get one out and have a dessert. I've already learned not to tell some of the ladies we know very closely that I had a whole mooncake, because I'll get scolded. So I'll just tell them I had a bit of a mooncake. Recently I had a mooncake. In fact, I made it into a sundae. Again, I believe that I'm the only person in the world who would have a mooncake sundae. But these mooncakes are based on the lunar festivals, the lunar calendar of new moons, and it's a gesture of friendship. If you're given a mooncake, you're part of the family. It's very, very special. So I appreciate the affection that we have from the Chinese community. But those are special days. And the Feast of Purim is based on the book of Esther, where God's people were slated for annihilation, and God rescued them, and that's a celebration. My wife wrote a dramatic presentation of the feast and of the celebration of Purim, and the young people in our church performed it. It was really very, 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 very meaningful. It not only taught the youth the book of Esther, but everybody could see very graphically what God had done to save his people. And then Hanukkah is a sacred special time. These are things that were done to remember things that are worth remembering. Our communion meal, or referred to as the Lord's Supper, is a feast, a bit of a feast, to remember something that's very important. And in that passage of Scripture, we're told, as often as we eat the bread and drink the cup, we proclaim the Lord's death till he come. Now, there are three references in that. As often as you eat the bread and drink the cup, well, that's what you do now. You proclaim the Lord's death, that happened in the past, until he comes in the future. So it looks really three ways: now, backward, and forward. It's something that's worth remembering. Advent, or Christmas, is a means of interpreting God's plan of salvation. If you would go to churches that use Advent wreaths, the readings that are read in connection with the wreath may vary from church to church, or even the individual words that are attached to the four Sundays of Advent. But no matter how it's portrayed, God's plan of redemption and salvation is interpreted and explained in the Advent celebration. When my wife and I moved to Oregon, we moved there in 71, and in 74, our first son was born. And that was it was a big deal for our family, but this was a big deal in the church, because a child hadn't been born in the parsonage for a long, 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 long time. And so our first son had many, many grandmas and grandpas who were just elated to have him around and to know him. And as he grew, my wife wrote an Advent booklet. You can buy these today. We didn't have a source for one. I don't know if we just didn't know about it or whatever, but that was 1974, back in the dark ages. So she wrote this booklet, and word got to the newspaper. I'm not sure how that happened. Word got to the newspaper that she had done this, and so the lady came out and interviewed us and took pictures of her son in front of the Advent wreath, where there were Bible stories, there was scripture portion to read, there was music listed that could be sung, and it was just very instructive, very, very good. Now, one of the things that came out of that was we had a man in the church. There were a lot of people in Oregon from Nebraska. There were so many Cornhuskers in Oregon that they had an annual picnic out at the fairgrounds. And there were just lots and lots of people from Nebraska. When farming really fell on bad times in Nebraska, these people needed a means of living. And they moved to Oregon and went to work in all kind of different enterprises in the lumber industry, timber and manufacturing, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, one of the men in our church was a former Nebraska farmer, and he said to me, which is a great compliment, he said, "All my life, pastors have told me to have devotions with my family, but you're the first person who told me how to do it." He said, "I'm taking the Advent booklet, and I'm doing the four Sundays of Advent and the Christmas Eve with my grandchildren. And so he was just ecstatic. He could read it, they could talk about it, and they could light the candles. So Advent is a means of explaining God's program of salvation, redemption, and it's understandable from the youngest of us to the oldest of us. It's just a great opportunity to explain what's going on. And there's music. O come, Emmanuel. We sang that this morning. The hymn, O Little Town of Bethlehem. The pastor of a church in America was in the Holy Land, I think, for Christmas one year. And he wrote O Little Town of Bethlehem for the children in a Sunday school. And so that's found its way into hymnals, not just for children, but for everyone to sing about the place where all of this took place. And then, O Come All Ye Faithful, there's all kinds of music associated with explaining what Advent is and what's going on. So, first of all, holidays are given, Advent and other holidays are given to explain what's going on so that we can appreciate it. The second thing is, holidays condense experiences. Now, my former associate I had in Watertown, Jonathan Youngman, who's now in Hoosick Falls, New York. The holidays, after we worked together a couple years, we figured out that in December, January, and February, our pastoral counseling went through the roof. People are so stressed and burned out over the speed of what's going on in all of this holiday festivity. And so it's easy for us to understand that the holiday condenses experience. If you put a holiday in a can, on the outside label it would say dilute with 3 or 4 cans of something. It is just intense. And one of the reasons why I talk about the purpose of holidays is to drain off some of this intensity and get things more realistic. First of all, Jonathan and I tried to live a balanced life. But we really sought to live a balanced life because the church didn't need 2 pastors who were bouncing off the walls along with everybody else bouncing off the walls. So we wanted to set a good, realistic pace of life for the congregation, the congregations in which we serve, to not be overdone by the festivities of holiday season. So it condenses experience. It boils it down to some things. Christmas isn't about everything. It's about certain things, just like any other holiday. It's not about everything. It's about certain things. Backing up, I don't necessarily talk a lot about this, but Thanksgiving, the pilgrims who came to this country, half of them died in the first year. And when they had a Thanksgiving with half the people who were left, they were thankful to God that they had survived. Thanksgiving historically is about God. When Abraham Lincoln made it a national holiday in the 1860s, it's about God. The Thanksgiving season is about God. Now we do a lot of other stuff, but it's about the Lord and His goodness to us. We're thankful to Him. And there are a lot of other things in it, and I'm not knocking that. That's just fine. Just remember, the number one issue is gratitude to the Lord for how He has spared us, how He's blessed us, how He's cared for us. So it's an intense time, but it's not about everything. It's about certain things. Advent boils down God's plan of redemption and salvation so that we can get a hold of it. Now, an example of this is in the Passover meal. I don't know if you've ever had a Passover Seder in your church, but over the years, I've conducted Passover Seders, a Messianic Passover Seder, where it takes the story of the Exodus and it applies Jesus as the one who fulfills the plan of redemption. And it's the whole story of the Exodus is boiled down in the Passover meal. For example, one of the things that the children of Israel experienced was the bitterness of life in Egypt and slavery. And so there's part of the meal that involves horseradish. And you know what horseradish is? Okay, good. We have a lot of hands. My dad had horseradish in the garden bed, and he would make horseradish. And when my mother would cook certain foods, she'd put horseradish on the table. And when we had company, people sometimes would say, oh, horseradish, this is wonderful. I just love horseradish. Well, they would take too much. And the next thing, they were jumping up from the table and going out the back door to spit it out in the garden bed because it was really potent. It wasn't potential, it was potent. It would, like, you felt like the top of your head was coming off. Very, very. Well, the bitterness in Egypt is pictured with that horseradish in the meal. And there are other things in the meal that portray the meaning of the Exodus event. And it boils the whole event down to some very specific, concrete things. So it condenses something that's very, very important into some tangible, observable things. There's a music, I heard this on the radio one day. There's a music composer who said that if you can't write your idea on the back of his business card, you don't have an idea. What is the idea? You know, can you say specifically what the idea is? We live in a culture where people will have pages and pages and pages and pages of information. And people sometimes are voting on things they don't even know. If you have an idea, you should be able to say what it is, very simply. I've referred to my friend who is a scientist who would interview, he was going to have surgery, and he interviewed the doctor doing the surgery by asking him how many times he had done this and it had failed. And when he told me this, I said, no medical school ever prepared this doctor to deal with you. Because this man would worked on the space shuttle. And when he wanted to buy something for the space shuttle, he would talk to the people who are manufacturing these things to find out if they knew what they were doing. And he approached his health the same way, and so he's talking to the doctor about this stuff. He wanted to get an idea from the doctor, just very, very simply. A yes or no answer. How many of these have succeeded? How many of these had failed? What's the purpose of this surgery? Why does this need to be done? It's a very simple thing. So holidays, whether it's Advent or Easter or Good Friday or Thanksgiving Day or Veterans Day or whatever, there should be a very, very simple, condensed idea behind it. It's not about everything. It's about some very specific things. The third purpose of a holiday is to forecast the future. The Passover meal not only described getting out of Egypt, but getting into the promised land. So it was about the future. Holy Communion, I've referred to this, as often as you eat the bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death, that's the past. Until he comes, that's about the future. So a holiday forecasts the future. Advent and Christmas prepares us for a new year. If this is going to be done successfully, we have to pace ourselves so that we're not worn out, that we really know what we're celebrating and what's going on, and that we need to tap into the meaning of what this day or what this week or what this month or what this season is about. It isn't about everything. It's about some very specific things that God has done, and our lives are refreshed and spiritually blessed by tapping into that. So holidays are to interpret what's going on, to condense it down so that we have it in some manageable form, and it forecasts where we're going and what's important for us for the future. Now, having said that, sermons should have three things. It has something to know. Well, what I know from this is that special days boil down the meaning of what is going on now, what's happened in the past, what's going on now, and what the future is. It boils it down. It's a manageable, understandable kind of thing. Every sermon is something to believe, and what I believe is that special days help me remember the things that are worth remembering. Everything is not important to remember, but some things are, and I need to lock in on those. I believe that. And I believe when you tell me that there are over 2 feet of verses listed in a concordance of the Bible about the memory, that's important. Every sermon should have something to do, and these are things I do. I'd encourage you to do what you can, or do what you think is important, but here are things that I do. These are what I call sacred seasons. Reformation, I remember in the month of October, I remember the Protestant Reformation, where the authority of Scripture and justification by faith are important things. Those are important things in my life. And so I celebrate Reformation Sunday. I think the last Sunday of the year, of the month of October, is Reformation Sunday. It's a big deal to me. I'm a believer. I believe in the authority of God's Word and that I'm justified by faith, not earning my behavior kind of thing, a work for wages attitude, not at all. I'm saved by faith. So Reformation's a big deal. November is Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving's about God. And we had a wonderful Thanksgiving day with relatives in Spartansburg, and it was spiritually refreshing time. December's about Advent and Christmas. These are sacred seasons, and I want to get the most out of these times and worship the Lord and refresh my own, have my own life refreshed by the experience of personal salvation and of the unfolding of God's plan. Those are sacred seasons. They're national seasons. And as a pastor, for example, I talk about Labor Day, the dignity of work, and the idea that we are on this earth as stewards of God's creation, and that work is a noble good thing. Work is not a bad, four-letter word. Work is important. And our national holiday of Labor Day is an important aspect of our Christian stewardship. Veterans Day, the people who have invested their life in the security of our nation, the freedom of the world. Veterans are honored, are respected for their years of service. When I was a pastor in Watertown, New York, about a third of our congregation was military or military related at Fort Drum. And we did what we could to encourage and support. When men were deployed to other parts of the world, we had Friday night dinners for all the wives and kids who were left at home while they were deployed. There are a lot of things we can do to honor our veterans and their families. So Veterans Day is a big day. I've never been in the military, but I honor those who have. Thanksgiving is a national holiday. God has blessed our nation, and people can talk about all the things that are wrong with our nation, but God has blessed our nation, and if you go back and study the history of our nation, it's obvious that His hand has been upon us, and we want to have His hand and blessing upon us despite all of the things that need to be corrected. But it's a day to remember God's faithfulness to us as a people. And then, these are personal seasons. These are things that I want to remember. I want to keep track of. For example, May 11th, 1963 is the day I was saved. I was 17 years old. I was being witnessed to by a friend I met in high school. We were in his house. I received Christ as my Savior. On my 40th spiritual birthday, I went to that same house. I lived back in the area on the 40th birthday of that. I knocked on the door of this house. Yeah, a business had purchased it. It was an engineering company now, and they had offices in the rooms. And I told the guy I had a spiritual experience in this house 40 years ago. Could I possibly see the room where this happened? And I might as well have hit him on the head with a baseball bat. He was just bewildered. And he said, Oh, sure. So I walked in and I went to the room where I had prayed and received Christ, and where we had prayed together. And I don't want to forget that day. That day changed the course of my life. There are people who know Christ, but they don't remember when. I remember when. It was a tremendous event in my life. February 27th, 1965, I met Pam at a basketball game when Nyack College was playing Messiah College. And from that day till this, we have been connected. There was never an on-again, off-again kind of thing. So I celebrate February 27th. That's a holiday for me. It's special, and I let her know it's special to me. I hope it's special to her. August of 68, I figured that when I was going off to seminary, the last summer I could give away to the Lord and get absolutely nothing for it, so I thought at that time, was that summer. And so I was a counselor at Miracle Mountain Ranch, and it was not for pay. Now, at the end of the camp, each counselor was given $20 a week. So theoretically, I was leaving for seminary with $160 for my seminary education. Unknown to me, when I got back home, before I went off to seminary, the man down the street put me in a tractor trailer, and over about 3 weeks, I made enough money to live the rest of the year. It was just great. So I hadn't given up anything. And I not only had the experience of being a counselor at a camp, but I had all this fun driving a truck. How good could things get? It was just wonderful. Anyway, when camp was over in August of 68, I asked Dutch and Phyllis Sickler for the hand of their daughter in marriage. And I remember the day I did this, Dutch leaned back in a lazy boy chair and said, "I was wondering when you were going to get around to this, because we had dated for a long time." And I told him that there was no way I was going to interfere with her college education. I knew how much her parents had sacrificed to do this. I had watched other kids do this. They get married, they forget their education. And I wouldn't do that. So they agreed that our marriage was a good thing. We set a date for the next June. But Dutch was so excited. We were going to ride two horses out to some big rocks that were adjacent to the property at Miracle Mountain Ranch, and I was going to propose. So I put the ring in a blanket on the back of the saddle on this horse, and wouldn't you know, Auntie Polly shows up, and Pam wants Auntie Polly to go for a ride on my horse. So Auntie Polly gets on the horse, and she starts riding around a field, and I'm standing over at the edge watching this blanket with the ring inside go all over this field. And it came back with the blanket on and everything's okay, and I've squeezed it and it's there, okay. So we went out on this ride to these big rocks, and I proposed, and Dutch said to a teenager on the camp, he said, "How would you like to shoot my shotgun?" "Oh, that'd be great." So Dutch gets the shotgun out and takes the kid out behind the house. Said, "Why don't you shoot three or four shots up through that tree?" So as I was proposing, or after I had proposed, the gun goes off. It was a big celebration. I want to remember my proposal, August of 68. That's when the offer was made, the deal was consummated, whatever. Okay, that's August. June 14th, the next year, we were married on Flag Day. And that was the nearest day from the end of my seminary to when logistically we could have a wedding. And we were married in Corry, Pennsylvania, in the old Alliance Church downtown. They have a new building now. November the 9th, 1975, that's the day I was ordained. I became a pastor in 1971. I wasn't ordained till 75. In those days, you had to have 2 years of satisfactory service. You had to write a whole series of papers. You had to read books and write reports on them. And then you had to be interviewed. Now, let me say something about interviewing. Over the last 5 years, I've heard people answer questions on TV or on the radio. And I thought, who trained them to answer a question? They're not answering questions. And I went back and I thought, when I was in college and declared an interest in the ministry, the Alliance interviewed me twice a year at Nyack College. So sophomore, junior, senior, that's 6 interviews. When I got to seminary, the denomination interviewed, I was 3 years, interviewed me twice a year. That's another 6. How's your math, okay? I've been interviewed at that point 12 times. I couldn't get out of seminary without being interviewed by 3 professors. Say, so 6 and 6 is 12. That's 13. And after completing all the requirements for ordination, I was interviewed for 4.5 hours. By a panel of men who were going to sign off on my ordination. If I had answered questions in any of those interviews the way people are answering questions oftentimes today, not everybody, I'd have been laughed out of the room. I think it's important that people answer the question they're asked and explain things. I've just talked about the purpose of holidays. The purpose of holidays are to make sense to us, that we understand what's going on. So, back to my ordination. My ordination was a very significant event in my life. And next to my chair in the living room is a devotional book given to me by the man who was like my mentor for ordination when I was in Oregon. And he wrote a nice message in the cover of that book inside, and he dated it November 9th. 1975. It's a very special day. I remember that. That set a big course for the whole rest of my life. From that, well, really, from 71 when I started to this very day, it's wonderful to be able to release God's word to God's people and share in the ministry. Very important day for me. November 7th, 2020, a special day for me. It's when we moved from Enola to Spartansburg. I knew that I couldn't keep living the way I was living in Enola. And the time had come for me to have a change. And so we moved to Spartansburg. That was a happy day for my wife. My wife never was able to live near her family, and she never complained about it. But hey, I had a chance to move near the relatives, and we took it. I would encourage you to have some special days in your own life. Think about days that are significant to you. They might be very different than mine, but it's important, I think, for us to recognize and remember the goodness of God in our lives and give gratitude to Him and let people know we appreciate them and their involvement in our spiritual lives and development. On my spiritual birthday, because he's so busy, I can't always get in touch with Dave Schroeder, but I call him and thank him for the influence he had in leading me to Christ. It's a good thing. And we went through high school together, we started seminary together, and we've stayed in touch all these many years. So it's time for me to say, this is the end. Holidays have a reason. They have a purpose. It's to interpret what we're experiencing. It's to boil it down and condense it so we can get a hold of it and it forecasts our future as to where we're headed. We're going to sing again, and then we'll have the benediction.